Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Program. I'm Susan Masika. Open a newspaper, look at an advertisement, or eavesdrop on a conversation between youngish people in German-speaking Switzerland. And it won't be long before you encounter an eyebrow-raising English word. Lobbyists, managers, and dealmakers prowl the political and business pages. And lifestyle sections are home to buzzwords like burnout, wellness, and even healthness.
I shouldn't perhaps say this, but I think it's incredibly pretentious.
In this edition, Thomas Stevens talks to a Swiss linguistics lecturer about why and when English started to flood German, and whether there'll be a backlash. They also discuss the phenomenon of Swinglish, English words with a Swiss twist. For example, ein Shooting for a photo shoot, or ein Rowdy to describe a hooligan.
The front page headline in the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, Switzerland's German language newspaper of record, caught my eye. Ein Cliffhanger beim Freihandel. A free trade, yep, cliffhanger. Why had the journalist chosen cliffhanger, I wondered? Is there really no German word he could have used? Would all readers actually know what a cliffhanger is? Or would they have images of trade negotiators dangling their counterparts off rock faces? Franz Andres Morrissey is a linguistics lecturer at the University of Bern. I started by asking Morrissey, who speaks the best English I've heard from a native Swiss, how he reacts when he sees headlines like Ein Cliffhanger beim Freihandel.
We do seem to have an awful lot more relatively sophisticated expressions in English, because everybody knows about things like foul or goal, or, you know, that kind of stuff from sports and all that. But what I find quite interesting is that a word like cliffhanger is actually something that you need to know a fair amount of English for in order to understand it. And this happens in a number of ways. I mean, you see things like deal breaker and stuff like that, where you sort of think you've got to have a relatively high level of English to understand this kind of thing. I just think to a certain degree it has something to do with the fact that English, especially spoken English, is so much more easily accessible thanks to YouTube, thanks to social media and all that kind of stuff. So youngsters are much more exposed to English in that respect. So they do have a fairly large passive vocabulary. On the other hand, what I think when I see this is that, especially in commercial speak, in marketing speak, there is so much empty language that is dressed up in, you know, that coating of English sophistication, which, when we really think about it, is actually pretty meaningless.
This was in the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, the NZZ, which is a so-called quality newspaper. Do you think most of the readers would understand a cliffhanger? I have these images of people thinking of someone hanging off a cliff and getting really confused. Because ultimately, the main aim of a journalist, sort of thought, is to be understood.
Yeah.
Do you think most of the readership would understand it?
I think, given the fact that the NZZ in particular is sort of aimed at, is a quality newspaper, is aimed at a certain class in society, I think most people would probably have an idea what it means and would probably pride themselves on their level of English, that they could do that. But I'd be curious to see whether a tabloid like Blick, for instance, would use it as well. I'm not sure they wouldn't.
Do you think one of the reasons why the journalist might have used it was he's trying to create a bond with the readership, like using a sort of private joke almost, in that if I'm using this word, if you know what it means, then you're part of my circle and so on. Do you see what I mean?
That makes an awful lot of sense, especially if we think of, you know, the exclusivity of the NZZ per se, because it's a well-known linguistic fact that language acts as a banner of identity. Language is also a great way to keep the in-group in and the out-group out. So you create a certain degree of exclusivity by using the language that you do. So from that point of view, it makes a certain amount of sense to sort of have that kind of the wink to the readership.
A bit pretentious, do you think? I mean, there's a fine line in English between sort of having a good vocabulary and showing off a bit.
I shouldn't perhaps say this, but I think it's incredibly pretentious. It is, as I said, I think it's part of all this marketing speak. And there is that wonderful institution called Bullshit Bingo, where you have a whole square of all these kind of words like global player, CEO, a stakeholder and so on and so forth. And as soon as you've got them all in a line in a meeting, you can shout bullshit and leave. But I think what this actually indicates is that there is a certain emptiness in, you know, using certain phrases that everybody thinks they know what they mean, but they're actually relatively devoid of meaning, I think.
I remember reading a letter to a British newspaper, it must have been about a year ago. It's from a guy who was at an airport, an English guy. Before he ran onto the plane, he bought a business magazine. He sat down in the plane, opened it up, and it was in German. Because on the cover, all these words, like, you know, their manager, deal breaker, and so on. Do you think the use of English in these contexts, newspapers, business, is it getting more? Possibly the internet was a real game changer. That's game changer.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think it probably was the internet. It probably was media of that kind. Because with the end of World War II, the influence of French as a kind of international language waned quite drastically and was replaced by English, even in Switzerland. But until relatively recently, I mean, you know, when we talk mid-80s, the importance of French, for instance, in the school system was unquestioned. And it's only after that, with the influence of IT, of everybody becoming computer literate, I think that actually was the game changer. That it was a sort of combination of technology on the one hand, for which there was predominantly English terminology, but also what the technology allowed us to do. In other words, to sort of much more easily build up networks, international networks, to access international content, which of course mainly was in English. It's also interesting in a way that, you know, some of the organizations that used to exist that fostered communication between the English-speaking world and Switzerland, you know, all these Swiss-British clubs or Anglo-Swiss federation groups and all that, they are really kind of like an association for the elderly who, in a way, still relied, in order to keep up their English, relied on such a network. Nowadays, when I look at our students, they're au fait with Netflix. They access all these television series in English. And I mean, I've been keeping track of students' passive knowledge of English since about 1990. And I find that administering the same test over the last 25 years, there has been a fairly steady increase, most noticeably since about 2008, 2009, in the average that the students scored. It's a purely passive test, reading comprehension, listening comprehension. And I think that would be an indication that they're more exposed to the language, not necessarily using it more, but more exposed to the language and therefore have a relatively good passive knowledge of it. Which, you know, to take us back to your first question about the cliffhanger, is probably one of the reasons why more people would have an inkling as to what the word, what such borrowings or what such code switches mean, perhaps, than, you know, 30 years ago.
Languages, I mean, they've been cross-pollinating each other forever, you know, using, especially English, has picked up as a real mongrel of languages.
Yeah. If you think of Anorak from Inuit and Robot from Czech, you know, I mean, English has definitely not been choosy about where to get new vocabulary from, yeah.
Some people see this more of a problem than others. I mean, in France, they've got the Académie Française, which is its job, one part of its job is to try to keep out invading foreign words.
Yeah.
And in Switzerland, there isn't, as far as I know, an equivalent of the Académie Française. It seems to be fairly laissez-faire in Switzerland regarding language. But is there much resistance to language creep? Or is there anything actually one can, what can one do to, is it like sort of, you know, stopping the tide? Is there anything one can do if young people in particular are intent on using a lot of English words? Is there anything one can do?
No. No, I don't think you can. One has to be aware of the fact, of course, that we don't always speak the same all the way through our lives. So we might actually sort of use certain expressions when we're young, and then we use slightly different ones when we're older. I mean, the classic example in English is that it's still okay to say cool, which was an expression that people used in the 60s and 70s. Nobody says groovy anymore. You know, certain words drop from usage.
One interesting thing I've noticed in Switzerland, it's a bit of a tangent, but it's an interesting tangent, so I'll ask you one question about it. It's the use of Swinglish, so Swiss English. Now, this phenomenon isn't unique to Switzerland by any stretch. It's when a country uses another country's word, but doesn't use it how the original language uses it. So, for example, the famous one is handy in Switzerland, which is, I would say, a mobile phone. Americans would say a cell phone. Most people nowadays don't have them, they use smartphones, but a handy. Or mobbing quite often comes up in newspapers, which means bullying.
Bullying.
It's got nothing to do with mobbing, which is, we would say, is getting together as in a mob. And there are a few words like this. Wellness is another one. And I saw healthness the other day, which made me shudder, on the side of a gym. Come in for some healthness. Now, these look like English words, but unlike cliffhanger, which was a perfectly a good English word used in the correct sense, these words, now I don't want to say they're right or wrong. I mean, a word means exactly what the user intends it to mean.
Absolutely.
But no one in England or the States would talk about a handy or mobbing in that sense. Taking handy as an example, how would that come about? How does a Swinglish word originate?
I'm not sure about handy. Probably it has got something to do with the idea that you have it in your hand. I don't think that it's got anything to do with, you know, handy as an adjective being useful. I think wellness, in a way, is an interesting indication of what happens, because it seems to suggest that non-English speakers have an understanding of English morphology.
And morphology is the breakdown of words.
Yeah, they know how to construct words in English. So if you have a word like well, in the sense of, you know, feeling healthy and all that, to make that into a noun, you have that element ness that you can stick at the end, actually seems to work out, because you have an analogous construction in fitness, right? So you could actually sort of say, okay, there's an awareness how to construct these words. And I mean, when you look at the sort of English that you find in non-English speaking countries, you could actually sort of say we all speak bad English quite well, and therefore we take certain liberties with the language. But I think that the point is that at this stage, where English has become, well, this is a cliche, of course, English has become the global, or one of the global languages. It may possibly sort of come into competition with Mandarin and Arabic, is to a certain degree with Spanish already. But if you have a language that is so widely spoken, and the vast majority of speakers are second language speakers, you have to realize that the English language is no longer in the ownership of English speakers.
I suppose regarding Swinglish, as long as everyone understands what the word means, it's not a problem.
Well, that is pretty much a sort of like minimalist view of communication. As long as you get what I'm trying to say, we're both happy. It's the cultural finesses that require a little bit more attention.
Regarding English used in Germany or Switzerland, I've read one theory that in Germany it's very popular, the use of English in newspapers. I saw there's that headline the other day about on Bild, the tabloid, saying... Is Donald Trump ein Sexmonster? That was the front page headline. In Germany, it's popular because Germany, for historical reasons, wants to be seen as an open country, does not want to be seen to be turning away foreigners or foreign words. Do you see anything of that in Switzerland? Or one could even imagine it being the opposite.
I have this feeling that Switzerland is actually, and that goes back to the time when I first went to England in the mid-70s as a Swiss assistant teacher, I had the feeling that the Swiss were at least as insular as the Brits. But the Brits live on an island and the Swiss don't. So, I think I would not describe Switzerland as open to the world in a sense that they want to be open to the world.
Linguistically open?
I think linguistically it's kind of a we have to situation. I think it's different amongst the young, because for the young, hopping on a plane over the weekend to go to London is absolutely no big deal. For us, when I was a kid, that was a major thing to do. So in that sense, they are obviously much more cosmopolitan. But I think that the generation, my own generation, you know, so people born in the 50s and 60s, they are still a little bit more sort of inward looking. And of course, it's a question also comparing rural communities to urban communities where openness comes much more naturally, because you are so much more in contact with tourists, with migrants, with the international community. So like in so many things, you know, Switzerland is such a patchwork of things that it's very difficult to say the Swiss do that or they don't do that.
The future, what's going to happen? Do you have any predictions for how the use of English in Swiss media might develop?
What's going to happen with the amount of English in German is pretty much up for grabs. I would imagine at the moment that the influx is going to continue, but there is most likely at some stage going to be some kind of a backlash where people say, well, let's go back to basics or go back to the roots or go back to, you know, and there might be an attempt to, I don't know, perhaps look for German equivalents. Those German equivalents might take hold if they're attractive enough. But if everybody knows the English word, there is little point, and this is the way in which language has happened, there's little point in introducing a term that people have to, in inverted commas, learn if there is one that they already know. And the classic example that I always see is Romansh Krishun apparently has a word for software. I can't recall at the moment what that word is, but nobody uses the Romansh word. Everybody says software. So, you know, it's that classic moment where you have to say, well, if we have to struggle to learn a new word for one that we already have, why bother? And I think what it boils down to very much with all language use is how important or how clearly defined is identity through the language that you use or through the forms of languages that you use. So we need to sort of see language not just as a system, but language as something that we use in order to define ourselves. So it's very much an individual thing.
Franz Andreas Morrissey, a linguistics lecturer at the University of Bern. So, after all this, what is the German word for cliffhanger? Morrissey says he can't think of one.
And I'm really thinking hard now. Nothing as concise as that.
So let's go to the dictionary. Bizarrely, Pons translates it as der Thriller, the thriller. But Collins goes one better, upgrading it to der Supertriller. Make of that what you will.
That was journalist Thomas Stevens speaking with linguist Franz Andreas Morrissey. Visit us at swissinfo.ch for more stories about the important role of language in multilingual Switzerland. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Donnie Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.